WBOO Portland.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, June 25th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. We will momentarily be speaking with Janet Fallon, who will be calling us from somewhere south of the border. She's in exile, and when I asked her, I hadn't heard from her in a number of years. I believe the last time was perhaps 2010, 2011. And at that time, she had been forced to flee the United States. When I spoke with her recently, I asked her if she was safe. And she said, for me, there is no safe place. They tried to kill her once. She was asked by the members of the LAPD how she wanted to die. We're rarely given a choice in these matters, but in Janet's case, yes, she was offered a menu, as it were. She'll be speaking with us about her book, which has just come out, Exile, and it's an extraordinary document of her story, which is beyond anything that one might find at the Cineplex. It definitely proves once again we can't make this stuff up. She'll be calling in from her remote location, and right now, though, I want to just remind everybody we had a story earlier in the week. Redwood Forest Defense, it's a grassroots community organization in Canada, fighting to change the Green Diamond Timber Company's short-sighted, unsustainable management practices. Whenever you find people saying they're going to manage a forest, that means they're going to turn it into a tree farm. Just a little translation there. We really do need a dictionary of right-wing think tank euphemisms for the predatory corporate practices. And Green Thumb or Grey Gun, now it's both in states where marijuana is legal. Police traditionally rip the plants out by their roots and stash them away in musty evidence rooms where the plants promptly keeled over. Now, in Colorado and Washington, California, and Hawaii, police are being sued by people who demand that their marijuana be cared for and returned to them in proper condition once the cases have been settled. After prosecutors choose not to charge them or if they happen to be acquitted. In some cases, one-time suspects are asked for hundreds of thousands of dollars to replace dead plants. And the USA Patriot Act hangs in the sky, America's latest iteration of the Iron Curtain, and one of the essential tools in the fascist toolbox. More than a dozen Muslims sued after learning that they were likely on the no-fly list, something the government still won't confirm. They found their only recourse was to fill out an online appeal form. Then yesterday, a federal judge in Oregon ruled that the Department of Homeland Security must give people a better avenue to pursue a claim that they were wrongly put on the list. Now, of course, the government could seek some way around under District Judge Anna Brown's order, or they can, of course, comply with the law. As we have seen recently, that's highly unlikely. The laws change at the whim of the government. Whatever the government or their corporate overlords, their corporate managers need, that's accomplished by simply changing or eliminating a law passed by people like you and I. Speaking of which, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled at a 9-0 vote today that police officers must obtain a warrant before searching an arrested suspect's cell phone. This is in most cases. And as you might have suspected, there are, of course, situations that escape this ruling. The court did not say whether its decision extends to other digital data devices such as an iPad. In the opinion, which was written by Chief Justice John Roberts, the court said that the right of police to search suspects that they arrest without a warrant does not cover, here's the key phrase, in most circumstances, data stored in cell phones. However, there could be some emergency situations in which a warrantless search of a device is permitted, thus spake the Supreme Court, John Roberts, who, remember, John Roberts, he was going to be so neutral and nonpartisan and completely apolitical. Yeah, that John, same John Roberts. The emergency situation in which they are ostensibly referring would be if it was suspected that the cell phone was linked to some type of explosive device. That, of course, does not have to be proved, but simply suspected. And we know what happens when people, police suspect people of some sort of wrongdoing, when they mistake a wallet for a gun, or when they decide to shoot somebody who's upset and waving a kitchen knife. Yeah, we all know about that. And I do believe we have Janet on the line, waiting patiently. There's a few more headlines. And it's way more important to talk to Janet right now. I do want to let listeners know that if the story that you're about to hear intrigues you, we will be doing a longer interview. You'll have an opportunity to hear more of the details of Janet's extraordinary story. She is an investigative journalist, the highest possible credentials. She's done brave and extraordinary work in a number of different areas, and she now lives in exile. And what we want to know is how that happened. Good morning, Janet. Thank you so very much, and welcome back. It's been years since you've been on KABU.
Thank you so much, Chris, for inviting me back on.
So, I'm looking at the prologue. There's a story that never should have been told. The principals in the story, that would be yourself, of course, and your mum. And that is just one of the areas. As I understand it, your mum was basically murdered because of she was put into a situation where all power was taken away from her. That's a story that you worked on, but there are many others, biological weapons of the most extraordinarily sci-fi dimensions. But why are you living in, I'll ask it, why are you living in exile? Why are you forced into exile at this time?
Yes, I was forced into exile by repeated actions by the U.S. government, which made my future viability within the borders of the United States impossible. The book that we're talking about that I've written and is now published about this is entitled Exile. And the book goes into the repeated efforts, machinations by the U.S. government to simply stop me in my tracks. And these efforts were keyed, anchored on the introduction into my life back in 2000 of a man named Jack Smith, who was living and still living in West Hollywood, who was in fact a federal agent, which he did not disclose to me. He approached me socially, did not disclose he was an agent, and did not disclose that I was his assignment. And as a result of my relationship, and I was essentially ended up in a relationship of sorts with Jack Smith.
Who would tell, as you mentioned it, at a certain point, it was a man with no past, no background. In fact, Jack Smith does not really exist. We probably never will know who Jack Smith really
actually,
is.
Actually, I've got a lead on it, but I'm not ready to come forward on this. But Yes, in terms of his background, at one point I hired a private investigator when everything really blew up in my face, so to speak, to try to determine who this person was. And the PI was able to determine that before around 1990, Jack Smith did not exist. There were no work records. There were no credit records. The man seemed to have dropped from the sky into the condo in West Hollywood that he was living in when he approached me. So Jack Smith had been scrubbed and given a new identity. And so as a result of this relationship, things began to happen, which became obviously not only very dangerous for my mother, but extremely dangerous for me. And the book.
Well, there were attempts on your life, mate. And when when you went to the police, what happened?
There were attempts made on my life, and the most dramatic and overt one is discussed in some detail in the book. As a result of this attack by Long Beach police officers, I was in a coma for 3 days and in a hospital. So this is not a, you know, what happened to me that forced me out of the country was not a matter of a perceived threat or a, you know, a suspicion of a threat. These boys were taking their best shot. Now, I think one of the important things about the book, it not only details my situation personally, what happened to me, what happened to my mother, but it brings certain things to light. For example, that the U.S. government is putting kill orders on U.S. citizens, which is exactly what had happened to me. Throughout the book, you will see where the U.S. government is also engaged in legal entrapment in order to falsely imprison targets, and at its discretion, the U.S. government is also denying all civil rights, constitutional protections, and avenues for redress for said targets. So the book, while it is a personal story and a personal exploration, has implications far beyond my personal story. And the question would be, you know, the ultimate question of exile is, well, why did this happen? What does this mean? And the book takes you through my own personal passage of discovery as, you know, a rather naive and unsuspicious individual, you know, who comes...
A journalist doing your work, yeah.
I come into a far greater understanding of what our government is really about and what this is all about. And I use the phrase demographic targeting quite a bit in the book to discuss what I believe is the agenda behind a lot of this.
Well, when we've been just discussing this week, I'll call it what it is, in fact, the murder of American citizen Anwar al-Awlaki. Many people, and I find two people on the left as well as on the right, confronted with the name Anwar al-Awlaki, In a subconscious way, people respond to that name as well. They may have American citizenship, but they aren't a real American. And of course, he was not in America. If in fact there is such a thing as a real America anymore at all, but you, Janet Fellin, this simply highlights that under this. Well, it's an iron curtain. We live in a fascist state. We are separated from the rest of the world by the iron curtain of the USA Patriot Act. Under the act, anybody at all, not just Anwar al-Awlaki, not just Janet Fellin, but myself, you, any one of us, at any time. And if you think, oh, well, I haven't broken any laws, if they want you, they'll make up a law. That's a fact. So you have all of.
And if they can't make, they don't make up a law, they'll just go ahead and break one that exists.
We have 1 minute. We have 1 minute left. What in particular do you want listeners to know about the book and about your current situation? You are still working as a journalist, basically a relentless investigative journalist, doing this out of a remote location, undisclosed location, south of the border. And we won't say anything more about that. But
what would you like people to know
about the book?
Right. Well, I want the audience to know that I'm currently writing for New Eastern Outlook, which is an online digital magazine out of Moscow. It is dual language in Russian and the U.S. And English. And the book, which goes into detail. As to what can happen, what did happen to a normal U.S. citizen, is entitled Exile and is on thebookpatch.com only. You can't find it on Amazon. It's only
good.
Orderable.
Janet, thank you so much for that. We'll be going for an extended interview later on with listeners who are interested. My guest has been investigative journalist living in exile, Janet Fallon. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, June 25th, 2014. Kathleen Stevenson is a KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
An in-depth look at Egypt under its newly minted president, a member of that country's old guard. Also, we'll take a close look at the continuing violations of international law regarding the U.S. war policies in Iraq and the region, and we'll have a deep background on the 2010 drone memo released this week by the Obama Justice Department. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.